Item number 9, from the Director of Audit's Office of the Comptroller, submitting an audit report titled Milwaukee County Transit Plus On-Time Performance and Customer Satisfaction Generally Are Good, but Better Oversight of Vendor Complaint Resolution Efforts is Needed, and requesting action to receive and place on file the said audit report and to concur with the audit recommendations provided therein.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hare. I see that your recommendation is to receive and place on file. Mr. Hare, about the audit, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jerry Hare, Comptroller's Audit Director. The audit that you have before you today is a response to a budget directive that had us look at the Transit Plus quality of service and fraud issues. And I'll talk first about the service aspect of the audit. We found that our survey generally reflected a very high level of satisfaction with the Transit Plus services. Specifically, 88% of our respondents said they were satisfied or almost always satisfied with their paratransit services, and 82% said they were always or most of the time able to schedule a pickup at the time they requested. 93% they always said they always felt safe on the transit system. In terms of on-time performance, the two vendors averaged about 95.7% during our review period in on-time performance. The on-time is defined as a 25-minute buffer for providers to be there for a scheduled pickup. And the results that we saw weren't even throughout the year. The activity during the colder winter months tended to be the point in time when the pickups were less timely. And that we concluded that was based primarily on inclement weather. The last point on quality really has to do with the overall time that people spend riding. The monthly average was 47 minutes, and that's within the ADA fixed route goals. That's one area, though, where there were a few outliers that we thought would warrant more attention from MTS Inc. They've got fairly good data that they use to manage the time that it takes to pick people up at scheduled appointments, but we think that the time that it takes to actually get from one place to another is something that ought to be elevated on their radar screen. There are, as you see in those numbers, and again, these are numbers, for those people who are adversely affected, who are in that very small percentile of having a ride that is delayed, either on the pickup, the drop-off, or during the ride, there are ways they can file a complaint. And it does make sense, in our view, to have those complaints first go to the transit service provider, to one of the two contract agencies. But we think transit management has not met its oversight responsibilities in terms of being on top of the complaints that come to those vendors. We think that ultimately whoever is managing the transit system should have more of a role in making sure that complaints are addressed, not just by the people who are online as our vendors, but the people who are on contract with this county to manage the services. Now, to put that in perspective, there were 689 complaints recorded by transit service out of over 570,000 rides. But again, this is one of those areas where if you're that individual that's stuck for hours at a time waiting for a ride, it's important that we be on top of it. There was one very serious matter that we looked at, and at the risk of not weighing into what could be or could have been a point of litigation, I think you're all fairly familiar with the situation where one of the transit clients died shortly after services were provided, and there were some very, very serious concerns about how the person was transported. And in looking at that matter, we do not reach a conclusion that the Transit Plus program was at fault, but we do believe that a video recording of the activity would be more useful going forward, both in terms of complaints on a day-to-day basis, but certainly in terms of a more serious incident, such as the one that was at issue here. A very much related point is what we believe is somewhat contradictory direction under the ADA requirement. First of all, paratransit vans must be equipped with wheel securement and personal restraint systems, but on the same token, drivers are not permitted to deny transportation services based on the inability to properly secure a client. We see that as problematic. It puts the driver, the providers, the county in kind of an awkward situation. We talked about this matter at great length with MTS Inc. And at the end of the day, our conclusion is that this is one of those areas where it would be appropriate to gain the perspective of other parties, specifically users, disability rights advocates, and those who may have a more informed perspective on how to make sure that the clients who use paratransit are indeed safe, both in their wheelchair and in the vehicle. Turning for a moment to the situation of potential fraud, you know, one of the first audits that we did in this program many years ago resulted in 18 cab drivers being sent to prison. This was an area that was wide open to fraud. I remember the front page headline in the, I think it was the Milwaukee Journal at the time, "Dead People Ride Cabs." And in the time since then, we're happy to report that Transit Plus has taken some fairly significant efforts to minimize the opportunities for fraud in this program. In fact, when we looked at all the controls and we looked at the data, we found that the most ripe area was going to be in the area of cabs, not so much in the area of van services. So we focused our work on cab services. And we did some work here in 05 with cabs as a result of a hotline tip, and indeed Transit Plus did tighten up their fraud controls. But what they've done since then is even more significant, and that is they've essentially not eliminated, but they've greatly minimized the incentives to commit fraud. Back then, there was a situation where cabbies were in the very untenable position of turning to creative ways to build a program for services that they were providing to our clients. What we've done now is we've got a management control that provides an administrative fee to, in this case, it's American United. They're currently the sole provider of Transit Plus taxi cab services. So by paying that administrative fee, we've shifted some of the burden for fraud prevention, fraud control, and fraud detection to American United. Now, this next point I'm going to make, I want to be very clear about. Well, I want to be clear about all the points I made today, but this one I think is subject to a lot of different interpretations. So let me just give it a shot here. The administrative fee that was paid to American United for 2012 was approximately $370,000. When we did our work in 2005 on paratransit fraud with regard to cab services, we estimated an annualized rate of fraud at about $10,000. Now, that's a pretty big price to pay for a fairly small amount of savings. In working this through with MTS Inc., they convinced us that this administrative fee that's paid to American United was necessary to ensure their continued participation in the program as structured and as dictated really under the contract they have with American United. So their point to us is that this isn't like we're spending $370,000 to save $10,000. It's so much more in terms of the administrative fee that we pay them to provide these services. The point is, for you as fiduciaries, the level of fraud that is likely in this program has been greatly reduced for a number of reasons. We did do a few other things beyond just the straight-up customer service and the indicators of any fraud in the program. One of the things we did was we looked at eligibility assessments. This concern came out of focus groups that we did with clients. And what we found is that in 2012, the program did over 3,000 assessments, and about 14.9% were denied eligibility. And in looking through the eligibility determinations, our one concern was that there's a great deal of latitude that vests with each individual screener. We saw some situations where the treatment of an eligibility application by one employee was not exactly the way it would have been dealt with by another employee. So we're taking the concerns of the focus group to heart. We're looking at the data and our own judgment and suggesting that MTS Inc. do a better job of ensuring consistency across the board with their employees who do the eligibility determinations. Two other quick points. You know, when we're in a program like this, it also makes sense to do background checks on the direct service providers. We're all familiar with situations where people have slipped through the cracks and been in a position to handle some of our most vulnerable clients. In this case, when we looked at the drivers for the two van service providers, we found that the background checks and verification of valid driver's license all trued up. I mean, everybody passed muster. But one exception, a driver that was actually in the House of Correction doing time for participating in an armed robbery. And that driver was immediately terminated from service, from employment by the van provider. The last point really goes to some governance questions we had. Long ago, we created something called the Transit Plus Advisory Council. It's a 13-member advisory board that provides a client perspective to the program. Our concern here is that the appointments are long past due for reappointment, and it's gotten to the point where there's no real accountability for who's on that board, and that is a recommendation we directed to the Director of Transportation. We did get a high level of cooperation from McDodd and MTS Inc. They've concurred with all the recommendations. So in addition to concurring with the recommendations by action of this committee and the board, we would suggest to you that we come back and give you an update on the recommendations in a six-month time frame. Thank you.
Thank you. On page 41, with respect to the four-month period from October 2004 to January 2005, 25 drivers overcharged Transit Plus clients on the 646 trips. You've indicated that 18 are now in 18 of those individuals potentially are in prison.
No, Supervisor, let me be more clear about that. The work we did with this program in its infancy was probably in the mid to late 1980s.
Okay.
And we worked with the district attorney at the time, Mike McCann. We did not generate convictions out of any of the work we did in 05 or in this more current audit. And, you know, it was very unfortunate. I mean, these were people who were stealing from a program that does serve some of our most vulnerable citizens in this county. So this has been something that's been near and dear to us. We appreciated the opportunity to go in and look at some of the concerns raised by this committee on quality of service, and we kind of built out some more work in that broad area to gain additional assurance.
Thank you. Supervisors Jurczyk and Haas.
First of all, I would ask that this be received and placed on file, and then also direct the six-month follow-up if that's what the director here would like. Thank you for this audit. As always, I find your work excellent. I do have a couple points to make. First of all, on that Transit Plus Advisory Council membership that's lapsed, I believe since that was, it looks like it was created in 1998. Since that time, the county through the Wisconsin statutes required the creation of the Aging and Disability Resource Board, of which I do sit on. And the main complaint that we have heard and the primary focus for this year on that board is transportation issues.
Yeah.
And this board is made up of consumers, advocates, and staffing from the Family Care Aging Department and so on. I don't know if it's feasible to perhaps, instead of having a 13-member advisory board that doesn't seem to meet, to perhaps have that Aging Disability Resource Board have some responsibility or somehow be a subcommittee or something where you would not have the lack of interest. This board is very active in terms of meeting and so on. And the thing that strikes me about Transit Plus and the services provided is they are critical to the family care program. Without transportation services, the family care program would not work as well, maybe not at all, because the population that requires this kind of service and to stay out of nursing homes requires a lot of issues surrounding transportation. And I think it's probably one of the reasons why, you know, this board also hears most complaints surrounding transportation. So it just seems to me there's some possibilities there. This is a board that very much cares about the transportation issues and are on the front line of dealing with those issues. So I would just make that suggestion. I don't know, probably something the administration needs to look into as to maybe there's some, you know, possibilities there. This other issue that you raised, this administrative fee of $370,000, I'm really not sure what we're paying for. Could you be a little more clear about what that administrative fee pays for?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the paratransit riders generally do use the band system, but there are those who are have enough mobility that they can use cabs, and sometimes it's more suited to their transportation needs. So they can use cab service. The fee to American United is primarily for the administration of just that whole aspect of the program. The other two, it's very much akin to the First Transit and Transit Express providers on the van side. And as you know, for that we pay an administrative fee. It's the administrative fee component for the cabs.
But the cabs are still collecting the fare, are they not?
They are.
And is the fare limited to the same rate that we pay for a van, or do they get to charge taxi cab rates?
There's a base that the client must pay, and then there's a max that they can have on the meter.
And is the base related to what they would pay for a cab, for a van service?
Yes.
That's interesting. I mean, it looks to me like $370,000 up and over the normal fare. That's a pretty handsome administrative fee.
Well,
and it may be related to the fact that this vendor seems to have a monopoly with regard to the call center. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's by design, yes. And I guess to your first point, let me say this. I don't know if this fee is excessive or not. The assurances we got from management is that they would not have this provider in this situation if they didn't agree to this fee. But when we go into an audit like this, I mean, we weren't comfortable just saying, okay, everything's fine, we can move on. To my knowledge, nobody in this body had ever been made aware that there was that fee that existed that was being paid to a taxi cab vendor.
Yeah, and I would like to challenge the Department of Transportation to take a careful look at this. You know, and it just seems to me, any entrepreneurs out there who are capable of writing apps, it seems to me there's this monopoly is something that is long overdue for some competition. And I won't say too much more than that right now, but the whole issue around cabs in this town is difficult and waiting for some solutions. The other issue is that I wanted to raise with you is this whole complaint system. Now, I'm going to back up here and ask if I'm correct in this. With regard to our MTS contract, they basically do the transit services for the county and then subcontract the van and transit plus services, correct?
The on-the-street service, yes, they subcontract. They have a program, a management team within MTS that is responsible for managing the paratransit program, but you're right. The rubber tires on the road are either one of the two van companies or a cab.
Okay, and I think you're partly answering the question I was going to ask. So the actual management does stay within the MTS contract?
Yes.
And it doesn't go with the service to providing the van service? So, I mean, it looked to me like perhaps the complaint were going to the actual persons providing the service and therefore no oversight.
Right.
And I don't want to mix this conversation up with the audit review that I am part of. But this whole issue surrounding the way we do Transit Plus and the van services are all wrapped into the larger transit services contract.
Yes.
I believe partially caused some of the problems we had with Transit Plus the last year. So I do hope that in your six-month report, you might be able to go to some of these issues with regard to, is there another way of structuring this? The whole $370,000 administrative fee and the issue with surrounding that call center and cab services, how we might address that in a revised contract structure with whoever becomes the vendor for transit. All of those things are very concerning to me. And then the other issue is perhaps a better way to do this oversight is to wrap it into the Age Disability Resource Board, which basically works directly with the complaints arising out of those disability and seniors that are receiving the services. So I don't know why we have to separate that stuff out.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I think the foundation of this TPAC was a court order by Judge Edelman probably in the mid-90s, and certainly a lot has changed since then in terms of this community's involvement program.
I will say this. I've gotten a lot less calls in my office complaining about the van services. So I do think some things have improved. In fact, I don't think I've gotten a complaint about the Transit Plus in well over a year, whereas I used to get quite a few of those complaints about people waiting forever and you know, lack of service and so on. So I think things have gotten better just from, you know, my on-the-ground phone calls, if you will. But I do think there are still some challenges in this program and the way we do the contracting. I think there's some real problems there. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Surely. For those who are listening, as far as Table 10 of the audit on page 39, for the Transit Plus taxicab fare payment structure, anything up to $4 is the responsibility of the rider. $4.01 through $14.60 is the responsibility of is provided by Transit Plus subsidy. And for any fare $14.61 and over, the rider provides the remainder after $14.60.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's that buffer zone between the subsidy that donut hole that's picked up by the program. I should mention one other thing on this point. The activity in this program has been dramatically affected by the New Freedom Initiative within paratransit, getting people who are mobile enough to ride a regular fixed-route bus on the bus. This program has been downsized dramatically because of that initiative.
Supervisor Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When is the contract up for the taxicab service?
I honestly do not recall.
Okay.
But I will get back to you on that.
Okay. And I did see in that contract there was language about allowing once band drivers to continue to be in the taxi cab program. Did you see that in that contract? And I didn't know about the lawsuit that you were referring to in the 90s and the fraud that happened. So it correlates now for me,
right,
what that means.
Those two initiatives were separate. The work we did with the GA was just straight up fraud. We had 18 different van providers, dozens of different cabbies that were basically just forging documentation of rides. But concurrent to that, there were a lot of issues with quality of service, timeliness, mm-hmm. getting picked up, dropped off, and the time in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Wisconsin Coalition for Advocacy issued a civil complaint before the federal court that resulted in, really, this government took the initiative to do a lot of changes before Judge Edelman handed down his decision.
Gotcha.
This is what generated the shift of this program into MTS Inc. and narrowing it down to just a handful of providers versus a very wide open, kind of a wild, wild west approach to providing the service.
Okay. I'll wait for the information to come back. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to echo a few of Supervisor Jurczyk's comments. I do have a great respect for the quality of these reports that we get from the audit department, and I thank you and your staff for the very thorough work of this. I know you do not relent if you have a question. That said, the unfortunate death that you referred to did happen to a former resident of my district, unfortunately. And while I too have gotten a great significantly reduced number of calls of complaints about late or missed rides from this. This issue is of interest to me, and so I thank the audit department also for their attention to the possibility of adding cameras to the paratransit vans. That was a large question that I had, of course, for our discussion with Mr. Hare. So my question then is, would a different committee, the Committee on Transportation, Public Works, and Transit, are they aware of this audit? And would they have any oversight or ability to comment should that addition to those vans be considered?
Mr. Chairman, we always, always prefer it when the chairwoman directs audits to this committee as the audit committee. But on the other hand, we've never, ever had a problem with a subsequent or even concurrent referral to the standing committee. We'd be happy to appear before TPWT in the next cycle, work with Chairman Mayo and other members of that committee if they have anything to add. I think as Supervisor Jurczyk noted with Recommendation 9, our goal is to get situations resolved. We don't own our recommendations, but we own the notion that problems need to be solved. So if there's other ways to address some of the issues we've raised in the audit, that would be a good forum. We'd be happy to be there.
Right. And obviously, this would be a future contract, so it
yes.
would, of course, come back to this committee as well. So, Mr. Chairman, would it be prudent, I guess, should this be referred to TPWT? I presume they are aware of its happening. But I don't know if they could do very, with all due respect to that committee, I don't know what they would do with it. I'm asking, then, generally, Mr. Chairman, should it be referred, or should we just allow this to proceed through the normal course?
Mr. Hare?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would leave it to the chairman of that committee whether or not he had his desire to schedule it. As I've said, we will appear before any committee to talk about our work at any time.
Okay. Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I will leave that decision to the honorable chair of that committee. Okay. Well, thank you again, Mr. Hare, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no further questions.
Thank you. Supervisor Bowen, did you have some? Anyone else?
Supervisor Bowen, Mr. Jenkins is home with the flu today. I would have had the answer for you right now in the timing of that contract. I will get it to the whole committee. Thank you.
We have a motion to receive and place on file.
Mr.
Item 9. Mr. Cady?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there is an accompanying resolution to this file that does just that, to receive and place on file, but also as part of the be it resolved would say that the board concurs with the audit recommendations contained there. Yeah.
So just adoption.
Supervisor Jurczyk moves to adopt.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I think going forward we're going to try to be a little more clear that we'd like the resolutions to be adopted in concurrence with our recommendations. To some, the phrase receive and place on file has leaves the impression of being tabled without action, and the county clerk has suggested some alternative language that you'll see in the future.
But as Mr. Cady's indicated, we do have a resolution.
Yes, that works. I think this resolution book. Works. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Jurczyk moves to adopt the resolution. Comments? Questions? Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll on this particular item?
Supervisors Haas?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Roma West?
Aye.
Jurczyk?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Bowen?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Cullen?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
9 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to recommend adoption prevails.
Thank you.